Hello, hello, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to another episode of the Daily Fringe Show. I'm your host, Nicholas Lorimer, today joined by Michael Morris. Today we're going to be talking about the Department of Education in Mpumalanga not filling teachers' posts and the reasons why, South Africa's life expectancy, and infrastructure in South Africa. So this is a story that I came across yesterday, I think it's a really great example of exactly why we bang on so much about crony networks, caterism, capture by sectional interests, BE premiums, that kind of stuff. The Mpumalanga Education Department has a budget for vacant teacher posts, as it doesn't have enough teachers at the moment, but it has intentionally delayed, those are the department's words, filling them because it has overspent on, quote, goods and services, which included the purchase of learning and teaching support material. The department has a 7.7% vacancy rate, underspent by almost 100 million rand in its budget for compensation of employees at public schools. It also failed to purchase 426 mobile classrooms in a couple of districts of the province. In that desperately needed those as classrooms because the money was being diverted to, quote, goods and services. Now, if you were being charitable, you could say, oh, well, you know, this is bad. You need teaching supplies, whatever, to supply the teachers. And like, this is just bad news. It's just the fact we don't have enough money. But I suspect that a thorough accounting of all of these contracts and what exactly the goods and services were being spent on would find that politically connected cadres were perhaps receiving a larger share of the budget than they should. And I think this is just symptomatic of so much of what's wrong with the way our state runs, Michael, is that money that should be spent on providing the actual service, in this case, teachers and classrooms, you'd think, you know, the first priorities for an education department, is instead going to pay inflated costs for materials that they may or may not need to actually run. What's your take on this story?
Exactly right, and there's this point made in the story that, you know, there's overcrowding in many schools due to the teacher shortages. So that that in fact compounds the provision of the hardware. You know, you're already now not spending on the requisite number of teachers, the teachers you actually need. You have shortages, unfilled posts. As a result of that, you now have overcrowded classrooms. But you don't have the cash to build new schools, and you know it becomes a snowballing problem. As that very smart fellow, Professor Alex van der Heerfer at Wits School of Government, Alex van den Heerfer, is a very smart. We've seen him keeping a close eye on all sort of aspects of state spending. But you know, he says poor management of finances is invariably tied to poor service provision, and this is, you know, a classic case. We're looking at very, very poor management of resources, and as you say, Nick, very likely all kinds of inappropriate tenders being awarded. This is unfortunately a pattern. It's been now an unignorable pattern. We know of instances where, and the public knows of instances where, you know, somebody who might have some expertise as a it might be maybe a financial advisor is suddenly delivering very specialist services for umpteen millions to some or other hapless government department, and to, you know, and the public ultimately, or not delivering but getting paid for supposedly delivering on the
services, but at such a ridiculously inflated rate that it's not even vaguely close to work. And I think of
clearly, you know, the
scandal in Gauteng, where there was the breathalyzer straws that were like, I think, 1,000% overpriced. Yes. And also you have pens. That's the other one that gets sold for like 100 rand a pen to the government.
Yeah. I mean, those are very good examples. And the brooms and the gloves and the knee pads. And I mean, the Eskom stories were also horrific. You know, clearly there's a completely skewed set of priorities at work. And they're frankly so often venal. That really is just the tragedy of the extent to which the tendering process and the budgeting and the procurement of public services services and goods for public purposes has been subverted by entirely the wrong kinds of procedures. I think you're quite right. This is symptomatic of exactly that problem.
And of course, the consequences in all, essentially what's happening is a politically connected elite is being prioritized over the millions of South Africans who are desperately trying to escape poverty, improve their lives. And we have the continuing tragedy of South Africa, which is the wasting of human potential, which is exactly what not having enough teachers is going to result in. Look, I'm not an education expert academic who knows all the ways to produce a perfect education system, but in my personal experience, too few teachers, too overcrowded classrooms is one of the worst things you can have in a school environment. And I think, you know, we see it in the fact that our education system has not been producing great results.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, I think it's also very much part and parcel of teachers having a sense of their value. This kind of story just underlines that despairing atmosphere that you imagine must exist in among the teaching corps, that they're just, you know, they're not valued in the way that they genuinely ought to be, and they know that they ought to be, because they know just how much counts on every little contribution that they make in producing the next generation of people who can read and write and count. It's an evil thing, really.
Indeed. All right, let's talk about our next topic. We've got new figures for life expectancy in South Africa, which is up. According to Statistics South Africa's mid-year population estimates, life expectancy at birth is now 64 years for men and 69 years for women. This is a dramatic increase from 2002, when the AIDS epidemic was at probably its worst, when life expectancy for men was only 52 years, and for women it was 57 years. So, you know, way down. And this is, I think, a genuine, thing to celebrate. South Africans are living longer. People are, you know, having fewer children die at a young age. That's all good stuff. But considering how HIV continues to be a very big problem in South Africa, one that has slowed but has certainly not been stopped, one worries that when we, for example, lose PEPFAR funding from the United States, which, despite government promises that we would be able to fill that gap, as far as I'm aware, the plans have not been finalized for how to replace PEPFAR funding properly. One worries that that number could fall again. Another interesting statistic here is that South Africa is very much keeping with global trends in that our birth rate continues to drop. In fact, even as recently as 2008, our birth rate was closer to 3 births per woman. It's now down to 2.2, which is just above the replacement rate of 2.1. And I wouldn't be surprised if in the next 10 years it drops below that replacement rate, which is a global trend. We've seen this all over the world, everywhere from, you know, the northern provinces of Nigeria to the suburbs of Italy, of Rome. You can see birth rates dropping like this. And I think there's still a lot of people out there who have this idea that it's just everyone is just having billions and billions of kids, but it's really not true. Michael, what's your take on all of this? I mean, this is one of those really important measures of how well we're doing as a society, which is, you know, how well are people, how long are people living?
Yes, I think it is a key indicator of some of the things we are getting right. You've highlighted a few of the central concerns, one being that one senses there might have been a measure of the evidence certainly suggests a large degree of complacency in our being able to rely on PEPFAR funding, foreign funding, to sustain a very expansive, necessarily expansive HIV/AIDS campaign. It cost a lot of money, and a lot of that money was coming from, the bulk of that money was coming from the United States. Have we geared ourselves up to replace that, the loss of that funding? I'm not sure, but that would be something to watch with some concern, because that would conceivably alter these figures over the next couple of years. But nevertheless, and we also have, I mean, we've spoken about this on the show before, we have an issue in South Africa, a shocking issue of malnutrition stunting children in South Africa because of the high rates of poverty. And we know the source of that. We don't need to belabor that point, but people understand poverty is not simply going to bed hungry at night. It is, as a consequence of being hungry, having stunted children, very, very high percentages for a society like ours. And a lot of that effect is irreversible. So that's a true tragedy, and one that society is perforce will have to live with. So there's that also. But on the other hand, there's quite an interesting point about how societies, even like ours, under huge pressure, economic stresses, and so on, high rates of immiseration and poverty, we nevertheless are kind of tracking international trends: fewer children, the rise of the urban class. The urbanization has been a very decided factor, not merely of the years since 1994. We spoke a little bit before the show about the evidence like this of great improvements in our society since apartheid. But in fact, one's aware of research. A wonderful historian, Bill Nassen, in his inaugural address, I believe at Stellenbosch, as far as I recall, in the early 2000s, made this point that a lot of the sort of main demographic indicators of South Africa through the entire 20th century, from child mortality, education levels, people living in the countryside and subsisting on a sort of agricultural sphere and moving into cities and to industries and then to services, all these things demonstrated a pattern which was typical of developing nations and developed nations elsewhere in the world. So very, very interesting there. And you mentioned, you know, the fertility rate of children, I mean, fertility rate of women, just in the 1980s, was it? It was 3.3 children. Oh, that was in the 1990s, 3.3 children per woman in the mid-90s. It's now 2.2. But if we go back to average fertility in South Africa in the 50s, it was 6 to 7 children. And in the 80s, 4 to 5. So, you know, there's been the steady improvement. And conceivably, I mean, society is never, it's not a perfectible affair. We're not looking for and don't expect nirvana. So every age brings its own problems. And the problem, as you say, that we're likely to have to contend with in the next 100 years is not going to be the overpopulation that people are so fearful of, but lack of people and aging populations that require so much more spending and fewer young people paying the kind of tax needed to support the older ones. So yeah, a very interesting story all around, actually, isn't it?
Indeed, and that last point is especially, I think, is really worth hammering home, is that, you know, we know in South Africa we have this big social safety net, which, while it's not, you know, it doesn't give out huge amounts of money, it does provide a lifeline for lots of people, particularly through pensions, particularly through child grants and such. But exactly as you say, we already have a situation where we have a relatively small number of employed people paying for this huge number of grant recipients. If you then make it so that the society is older, which means you have to spend more on healthcare because older people just need more healthcare. If you don't have as many young workers coming in who are relatively cheaper for the welfare system because they usually don't take as much in terms of grants, they don't get pensions, it takes them a while to get child grants, that kind of thing, your tax burden is worse. And this is a problem, particularly you can see it in European countries, where they have these aging populations and they run into financial problems because they just don't have, you know, new people coming into the system to pay for those systems. This is a problem for South Africa. If our birth rate continues to fall, even if our economy remained flat where it is sort of in relative tax terms, or, you know, our debt and all that kind of thing, this would be a growing problem. And so it's just another reminder of why we need that economic growth, why we need to increase prosperity. You don't want to be caught in the trap of where you start getting old and childless before you've gotten rich. Because if you're rich, you can deal with those problems much more easily. You can get fancy technologies and to work your factories. You can get AIs to do jobs and things. But if you are poor and old, your society is not going to have a good time.
No, indeed not.
Okay. Our last story. Today, we being the Institute of Race Relations, launched a paper about infrastructure in South Africa. And, you know, every single day when we're looking for stories to talk about on the show, we always come across an infrastructure problem. This one was titled Long-Term Concern as Municipalities Owe Rand Water, which is the bulk water provider in Gauteng Province, 8 billion Rand. The CEO of Rand Water, Sipho Moasi, was complaining about the municipalities owing money being a serious drain on the ability of the bulk water supplier to function. In 2015, municipalities in Gauteng only owed 1.5 billion rand. This has now gone up to over 8 billion rand in the third quarter of 2024-2025 financial year. It also contained this sort of, I thought, not very well thought out statement by the CEO of Rand Water. He was talking about how, you know, they recently had to do this maintenance and a lot of people lost water in Gauteng and they were upset about it. And the CEO responded, "We do this on a yearly basis. It's not correct to say the maintenance was prolonged. The challenge people are facing is system recovery. The system takes time to recover depending on where you are. The frustration is that people want water all the time. They want the system to recover quickly." Well, yes, we do want water all the time. I think that's not too much to ask. And the job of infrastructure providers is to make it so that the people using the infrastructure don't even think about the infrastructure because it just works, right? The system should just work. That's how you know you've got a good working system. They have systems to aid with recovery, those kind of things. And engineers are capable of doing these things if you have the right investment. This is a sign. It's not that people have too high expectations of, oh, no, we want water all the time. I know, decadent luxury in the South Africa here. Michael, what's your take on this one?
Yeah, I mean, exactly. You know, and can you imagine the impact both on the public morale and on the political atmosphere in which these problems are approached, on the staff at Rand Water, if what he had said was, we insist that water is provided and available all the time. Good, clean, cheap water available to all people all the time. That's our objective, and we're failing, and we get that, but we're going to turn things around with that single objective in mind. And so, you know, what a pity that he uses this opportunity, there is now a crisis, and to say, well, you know, give an excuse. It's just unreasonable for people to expect to have a service all the time. And they really just need to understand.
It's probably not the main culprit when it comes to the water problems in Gauteng, yeah, which are far more to do with both municipal and national level rather than the provincial supply.
Indeed, indeed. And this is a good point. You did mention it, but to just bring attention back briefly to Andrew Kiever's report released today. It was published with the generous support of the Konrad Adenauer Stiftung, and it's looking expressly at how vitally important getting the infrastructure right, fixing it properly, is key to being able to put the country on a path to economic growth. And it's in every case, water infrastructure, electricity infrastructure, ports, rail, and road infrastructure, in every case, she sets out clear, simple, actionable solutions. Do this, do that. Establish a specialized railway police unit, for example. There used to be one. That's point number one. Set up a consultation network, open, transparent, public, private partnership procurement systems, and so on. There's a great deal of detail. I highly recommend listeners and viewers have a look at it. She also looks at other countries where they've dealt with similar kinds of problems, case studies where, you know, you can see immediately this is something we could use that could work, but this maybe not, and so on. But it's absolutely crucial. The Rand Water is a good example, and the IRR is convinced that the solutions are possible, and this is our contribution to that constructive debate. Let's move away from complaining about being frustrated that people want services. Let's focus on how to get it to them.
Yeah, exactly. And you can check out that webinar and that paper if you go to the Institute of Race Relations YouTube channel. Can find it there. If you go to the IRR's website and go to our publications section, you should be able to find it there. Okay, well, thank you very much, everyone, for listening. We hope you found the show interesting, and we will be back tomorrow with The Daily Friend Show. That's a wrap.
The Daily Friend Show and The Daily Friend are a project of the Institute of Race Relations, the IRR. The IRR is a think tank which was founded in 1929 to study race relations in South Africa and works to change government policy to improve race relations through non-racialism and to ensure the prosperity of all South Africans. If you like our work and would like to support us, please go to irr.org.za and click Support the IRR. Or you can go to thedailyfriend.co.za and click the Fund Us button.